Hare Thank you. Hare Krishna. I'm going to read a verse first. We'll say a few words. Ritertam yat pratyeta, yat na pratyeta chatmani, tad vidyad atmano mayam, yatabaso yatatama. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. Purport. In the previous verse, the absolute truth and its nature have been explained. One must also understand the relative truth to actually know the absolute. The relative truth, which is called Maya, or material nature, is explained here. Maya has no independent existence. One who is less intelligent is captivated by the wonderful activities of Maya, but he does not understand that behind these activities is the direction of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Material nature is working and producing moving and non-moving beings only by the supervision of Krishna. The real nature of Maya, the illusory existence of the material manifestation, is clearly explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. The absolute truth is substance, and the relative truth depends upon its relationship with the absolute for its existence. Maya means energy, therefore the relative truth is explained to be the energy of the absolute truth. Since it is difficult to understand the distinction between the absolute and relative truths, an analogy can be given for clarification. The absolute truth can be compared to the sun, which is appreciated in terms of two relative truths, reflection and darkness. Darkness is the absence of sunshine, and reflection is a projection of sunlight into darkness. Neither darkness nor reflection has an independent existence. Darkness comes when the sunshine is blocked. For example, if one stands facing the sun, his back will be in darkness. Since darkness stands in the absence of the sun, it is therefore relative to the sun. The spiritual world is compared to the real sunshine, and the material world is compared to the dark regions where the sun is not visible. When the material manifestation appears very wonderful, this is due to a perverted reflection of the supreme sunshine, the absolute truth. As confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra, whatever one can see here has its substance in the absolute. As darkness is situated far away from the sun, so the material world is also far away from the spiritual world. The Vedic literature directs us not to be captivated by the dark regions, tama, but to try to reach the shining regions of the absolute, yogi dhamma. The spiritual world is brightly illuminated, but the material world is wrapped in darkness. In the material world, sunshine, moonshine, or different kinds of artificial light are required to dispel darkness, especially at night. For by nature, the material world is dark. Therefore, the Supreme Lord has arranged for sunshine and moonshine. But in his abode, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no necessity for lighting by sunshine, moonshine, or electricity, because everything is self-effulgent. That which is relative, temporary, and far away from the Absolute Truth is called Maya or ignorance. This illusion is exhibited in two ways, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita. The inferior illusion is inert matter, and the superior illusion is the living entity. Living entities are called illusory in this context only because they are implicated in the illusory structures and activities of the material world. Actually, the living entities are not illusory, for they are parts of the superior energy of the Supreme Lord and do not have to be covered by Maya if they do not want to be so. The actions of the living entities in the spiritual kingdom are not illusory. They are the actual eternal activities of liberated souls. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshua Unmilitam Nina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Koroti Vachalam Pangum Nangaya Te Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gunandina Tananam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Saman Iti Namani Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Sanyavari Pasta Chade Satarane Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Thank you for reminding me to put my phone on silent mode. I was having a discussion with one gentleman today. We were discussing the nature of achinchya beda beda tattva. Lord Chaitanya's presentation of the Absolute Truth, which is translated as the inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference between the Supreme Lord and his energies. We were emphasizing the point that, yes, there is oneness, and we gave the simple example that Srila Prabhupada often gives, that just as there is sun and sunshine, and sunshine being the energy of the sun is the same as the sun. However, there's also a difference. If we open the curtain and the sunshine enters the room, it has one effect. If the sun enters the room, there's another effect. So there is also a difference. This verse is actually a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, and it is one of the four nutshell verses which are revealed into the heart of Lord Brahma, which was the essence of Vedic wisdom, where Krishna explains how it is he who existed before creation, it is he who existed during its manifestation, and it is he who exists when everything in this world is destroyed. He continues to exist. And in this verse he says that but whatever appears to be truth without me is my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. In other words, it's translated elsewhere by saying to that Lord Brahma that whatever you see of any value, if it has no relationship with me, you should know it to be my illusory energy. Essentially, what Krishna is saying is that everything is resting on him. Matak parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. He says, there's no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me, just like pearls are resting on a thread. Yet, although everything is resting on him, everything is manifestation of his energy, he remains distinctly different from everything that is created or originates from him. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetragyakya Tata Para Avijikamra Samgyanya Tatiya Shakti Ayushate. This verse from the Vishnu Purana says that Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetragyakya Tata Para. He said that the Lord, potencies of the Supreme Lord Vishnu are summarized in three categories. That is the superior energy, which is filled with knowledge. It is the material energy, which there is the living entity who, although belongs to the spiritual energy, he can come under the influence of the third energy, which is the material energy, and which is visible by ignorance. Ignorance means forgetfulness of Krishna and forgetfulness of everything that exists in this world, is how everything in this world is connected to him. And the example that is being used in this verse is that just like sunshine is dependent upon the sun, and darkness is also dependent upon the sun. Darkness has a relationship with the sun. It is relative to the sun, because when the sun is covered, then there is darkness. Prabhupada brings out the point in the spiritual world, everything is self-luminous. Everything is bright. I remember when I saw the first Back to Godhead magazine way back in whatever year it was, it must have been 1970. And although at that time it was still before I had come in contact really with Krishna consciousness movement, I saw that Godhead is light. And I think that was the Godhead is light. In other words, that in the spiritual world, everything is bright. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the spiritual world, there's no need for sunlight, moonlight, electricity, because everything is self-luminous. Whereas he says here, in this verse, he's explaining, in this world, we are dependent upon the light from the sun, we are dependent upon the light from the moon, and we are also dependent upon artificial light, because the nature of this world is darkness. Krishna suya sammaya haya andakara yahan krishna taha maya mayade arikara. And Srila Prabhupada used to quote this verse many times, that Krishna is like the sunshine and maya, this illusory energy, is like darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. Similarly, as soon as one takes the Krishna consciousness, then the darkness or the influence of the illusory energy will immediately vanish, because darkness cannot exist in the presence of sunlight. But this world by nature is dark. And although we see light coming from the sun, we're dependent upon the sun for that light. But the very nature of the material world, which is one quarter of the creation of the Supreme, is darkness. So therefore, he's saying that whenever we see sunlight, it is relative to the sun. And wherever we see darkness, it is also, or reflection, is also relevant to the sun. Because reflection is a projection of sunlight into the darkness. So they're both dependent on the sun. And Prabhupada makes the point that the actual substance is the sun, and the two relative truths are darkness and reflections, which are both dependent on the sun, whether it's covered or not covered. And therefore he makes the point that this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. I oftentimes tell a story in this connection. I like it because I was telling some people today, I was meeting them in the home, how Srila Prabhupada would oftentimes use analogies to help us understand philosophical truths, which otherwise are not so easy sometimes to conceive. This is in one sense an analogy, but it's also a story that I personally experienced, which talks about reflection and substance. And I recall that when I was visiting somebody once in their home in Ukraine, and because in Ukraine, people find, some people at least find the need to have to protect their homes, and they have dogs to protect their homes, guard dogs who stay outside, and in the hopes that the dog will take action if an intruder comes. I don't know if they're necessarily trained that way. Sometimes I see them very, very passive. But this was a big dog, German Shepherd. Didn't look so passive to me. But fortunately, it was preoccupied. And I remember, after visiting his home, we were coming outside, and I was standing in the doorway as I was speaking to him. And we were talking for some time, and then we heard some sounds, and we saw that in the yard, it was a fenced-off yard, the dog was becoming quite vicious, but not, fortunately, not at the intruder, but something else. The dog was running into the wall. It was a brick wall, thick brick wall. Dog was running, lunging into the wall, gnawing its teeth into the wall. And then, of course, because the wall is usually pretty, brick walls especially, pretty resistant to this type of behavior. The dog would fall down after lunging at the wall, and then it would come back, and it would run viciously against the wall again, and lunge at the wall, gnashing its teeth into the wall. And I didn't see any blood, but it was foaming. I thought maybe the dog was rabid. I said, "Is there something wrong with your dog?" And then it went on for a little while. And he also was a little bit astonished by the behavior of his dog and starting to wonder what's happening. And I said, "Should we go inside?" And we didn't go inside, we watched. And then I picked up, and I noticed it before he did, that the dog was actually lunging at a reflection. That the sun was coming down and was hitting my watch. And whatever time, ever I moved the watch, the reflection would move along the wall. Somehow it was perfectly staged on the wall, so that it would go back and forth, and whatever the dog found the opportunity, he would lunge and try to catch the reflection. And obviously there was no substance. And because there was no substance, he was becoming a little frustrated, and he was actually hurting himself in his efforts to catch something which had no substance. And when I think of that example, it reminds me of this verse that Krishna is saying that this world actually is not the substance. It's simply the reflection of this substance. Whatever we see in this world is a reflection of the reality, which is the substance, of the world which is eternal. And in many places, Krishna describes the nature of the spiritual world in Bhagavad Gita, where he just says that it is supreme abode is unmanifest, it's infallible, it's the supreme destination. When one goes there, one doesn't have to come back. Tadama paramamama, that is my supreme abode. He gives himself he speaks about the difference between material and spiritual. And whenever we talk about that which is material and that which is spiritual, then Krishna very clearly states, etajunini bhutani savadhichabhadharya aham krishnasya jagatat prabhavakpalayastata, that of all that is material and all that is spiritual, you should know that I am both its origin and its dissolution. In other words, everything is depending on Krishna. He is the origin of everything that comes into existence. And the details of such, of creation, the details, of course, it's much different than the modern theory that exists about creation. And oftentimes we hear creationist theories about how this world came into being. But actually the authoritative statements of the Vedic literatures give us an understanding that everything, as we said in the very beginning, is a transformation of Krishna's energy. And therefore, whatever exists, although it cannot exist without Krishna, because it's everything is dependent upon him, just as pearls are resting on a thread. If you take away the thread, the pearls cannot rest. If you take away Krishna, nothing in this world can exist, because he is its source, he is its maintenance, and ultimately its dissolution. Of course, when we say dissolution, Krishna also very clearly explains in Bhagavad Gita that this manifestation, maintenance, and dissolution is a sequence that goes on eternally. And bhutva bhutva praliyate, he describes how this creation of this world comes into being, and how each universe is generated from the pores of Mahavishnu. Sometimes we see these fantastic posters. I remember in the old days, the Brijbasi posters were the ones that I was first introduced to in India, and you see the pictures of Mahavishnu lying on the causal ocean. You see all these bubbles coming out, manifesting from him as he's lying in his yoga nidra sleep. And then these bubbles are actually unlimited universes which are emanating from the pores of his body. And this Mahavishnu is simply an expansion coming from other expansions which are coming originally from Krishna. And although Krishna is expanding in these different forms for the purpose of creation and for the purpose of maintenance and for the purpose of annihilation, all these forms that are expanding from him, we have this conception that if they're expanding, and we try to go back and we think, well, there must be some point in time when they expanded. Then, of course, we oftentimes speak about this point that it's very difficult to understand, because just as Krishna is eternal, Krishna's energies are eternal, and eternal doesn't exclusively mean that they go on from here to eternity. But eternal also means, as Advaita Chutam Anadim Anantarupam Adhyam Puranam Yovanacha Vedeshu Durlabam Adurlabam Atma Bhakto Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. The eternal means that Krishna is Advaita, which means he's non-dual, Achutam, his body is never subject to decay. Anadi, he is the origin, everything is originating from him. Anantarupam, his form is endless. He is the beginning, and although he is the beginning, he has no beginning. As he states in Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna, Natvevam Nasam Natvamevi Janadipa. He says, never was there a time when I did not exist, Arjuna. Never was there a time, Arjuna, when you didn't exist. Never was there a time when all these kings assembled on the battlefield and did not exist. Nor in the future will any of us cease to be. And Srila Prabhupada often quotes this verse and establishes an argument for those who think that everything is one, which was actually what my discussion was this afternoon. The person was trying to understand the difference between the Dvaita and Advaita. That his understanding is that ultimately everything is one, but he's trying to understand how is everything one and then not one. It's a little bit difficult to understand. And therefore it's called achintya, beda, abeda, tattva. It's inconceivable, achintya, simultaneous oneness and difference. So whenever we hear of something that has no beginning, it's a little bit inconceivable. Because within our experience of this world, everything has a beginning. But yet Krishna says, Natvivahjatunasam, I have no beginning. You, Arjuna, you have no beginning. All these kings assembled on the battlefield, they have no beginning. And they'll always exist in the future. So very clearly, I mean, Krishna, being the absolute truth, and the knowledge that he speaks is obviously the absolute wisdom. Why would he bother to make a distinction between Arjuna, the kings, and himself if they were all one? Belittle. So therefore, he makes a distinction because Arjuna always existed before. Never was he not Arjuna. These kings always existed before. Never did they not exist. If they were all one and all of a sudden they became many, and we're ultimately, in the ultimate sense, which is what some people think, the ultimate sense, we're all one. And our perfection is to come back and to realize that our oneness is that we're all God. And Prabhupada, of course, never liked to hear statements like that. And he was quite emphatic that, no, there's always a difference between me and God. God is always God, and I'm never God. And you can never become God. And if at any time you think that you can, all of a sudden you begin to think, oh yes, if I perform some yogic process, I can become God, then Prabhupada says, okay, then how did you forget that you were God, that you have to perform some yogic process to remember that you're God? That means God is the controller of all energies, but what happened? You slipped? Did you lapse into some forgetfulness? I mean, what happened? Why do you have to now, all of a sudden, perform some yogic process and become God? Something obviously happened somewhere along the line. Did you just lose control? Therefore, obviously, our understanding is that the difference is that Krishna is always the supreme, and the living entities are never the supreme, but they're part and parcel, which means simultaneous one and different. Simultaneously one is that they have the same qualities as the supreme. Just as Krishna is Sat, Chit, and Ananda, Krishna is eternal, he's full of knowledge, and he experiences unlimited bliss. The living entities also are eternal. They also can be full of knowledge, they also can be experience bliss, but Krishna is unlimitedly this way. Whereas the living entities, and this is the point, Mayadish Mayavash Ishvere Jive Bede. Krishna is Mayadish, which means he is the controller of Maya. And the living entities, because they are not God, they can come under the influence of the third energy, whereas Krishna never comes under the influence of that energy. Just as the sun creates the clouds in the sky, but the clouds never cover the sun. We think the sun is covered because we're here in this world. We look up, we see the clouds. But anybody who flies in an airplane knows that as soon as you go above the clouds, there's no clouds in front of the sun, although the sun created the clouds. The same way, Krishna creates this material energy, but he's never covered by this material energy. He never forgets. Whereas the living entities, who are part and parcel, they are Mayavash. They can come under the influence of one, either the superior energy, which is full of knowledge, or this illusory, temporary illusory energy, and forget. But they have no beginning. Never was there a time when they did not exist. So therefore, the most complete understanding of Krishna is to know that Krishna eternally exists and his energies eternally exist. They're always existing. They're never created. But one of his energies is the living entity, and as we said, the other energy is the material energy. The material energy, we think of it as temporary. And that's one of the differences between this material energy and the spiritually. It's temporary. It comes for some time. But actually, temporary means that, as we said before, the process of creation, staying for some time, and destruction is an eternal process that goes on and has no beginning. Tough. It's tough to conceive. It's tough. And whenever there's creation, and this is, of course, I think we spoke a little bit about this last time we were here. Whenever there's creation of this cosmic manifestation, then the first thing that's created is time. Because without time, nothing can have a beginning. So therefore, before anything appears and is created, the first thing that has to be created is this time. And time in this world has a destructive feature. By the influence of time, everything is born, grows, produces byproduct, it stays for some time, it dwindles and vanishes. Everything goes through that transformation. But Krishna says, well, that abode, he even describes that abode as unmanifested. What does it mean, unmanifested? It means never was there a time when it manifested. Tough. You know, mind is like short circuits. It's inconceivable. But if we want to be able to understand it, and this evidence also Krishna gives in many places in Bhagavad Gita, he emphasizes the point, if you want to enter into the mysteries of understanding me, you can only understand these mysteries. There will always remain a mystery, but you can only understand when it's revealed. Prabhupada gives the example, just like if you want to see the sun at night, you go outside and you can take a torch. Oh, sun, where are you? You won't find it. You have to stand there long enough so that when it comes time for the sunrise, then the sun reveals to you. But you, with your torch, you cannot see the sun. The same way, if we want to understand that which is inconceivable by these blunt material senses, which are, in effect, covered by the influence of the time factor, covered by the influence of the material energy, and covered in so many different ways, that then we cannot understand it simply with the mind. Prabhupada used to quote the verse, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhavedrayam Indriyai Sevu Mukehi Jivados Svayam Eva Spurachyada, that Krishna can never be understood by these blunt material senses. He can only be understood with spiritual senses, which have become purified. Sevu Mukehi Jivado. The jiva means the tongue. Become purified beginning with the tongue. And he says that the way to purify the senses is by utilizing the tongue in Krishna's service, is by speaking about this absolute knowledge that is given to us in the Bhagavad Gita, by speaking about Krishna, his activities, his eternal pastimes that go on eternally in the transcendental realm, and by chanting his name, which is also completely transcendental and spiritual, and is never influenced by the material energy. Naman Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Punishudho Nichimukto Binatman Nama Namino. This verse describes it, that the holy name of Krishna bestows all spiritual benedictions because it is Krishna himself. It is never a material name under any circumstance. It is no less powerful than Krishna himself. It is eternal never influenced by the material nature in any way. And this is because Krishna and his name, they're non-different. So another way to purify the senses is by chanting this name, Krishna. Prabhupada uses this simple example. He says that just like iron is iron, but if you put it in fire, it becomes like fire. And the longer it's in the association of fire, acts just like fire by that association. In the same way, Krishna's name is Pavitram, pure, completely pure, transcendental. We're still being covered and forgetful and under the influence of this time factor and the influence of the modes of material nature. We cannot see how this is Krishna. We still see matter, and we see, and Krishna says, whatever you see of any value, if you don't see how it's connected to me, then it's my illusory energy. It's that reflection which appears in the darkness. It's matter. And he even says that even the ability to see things separate from me, that ability, it's coming from me, he says. I'm seated within everyone's heart. Savasachaham hiri sanavishtu matak smiti gyanam apohanam cha. So I'm seated within everyone's heart. And from me comes the ability to remember, comes knowledge, and the ability to forget. If you want to forget, then Krishna allows us to forget. Not that he wants us to forget. He wants us to remember. But he allows us to forget because he's in the heart as super soul. He's in the heart of every living being. And as the super soul within the heart, he is upadrashta anumanta. He is the witness and he gives sanction. Give sanction. He allows us. You want to forget? Okay, you can forget. But if you want to remember, Krishna says, oh, very nice. Tesham satatam yuktanam bhajatam piti purvakam didami buddhi yogam tamim. He says, to those who are always worship me with love and devotion, I give them the understanding by which, the buddhi yogam, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. Tesham evanukam partam ahama jnana jamtama nashayam yatma bhavasto jnana deepena basvata. Out of compassion for them, I who am dwelling within their hearts, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And Krishna dispels the darkness from within the heart by revealing himself. So if we try to understand that which is eternal, that which cannot be conceived by the material mind, simply by our limited sense perception, is very difficult. But when Krishna removes the influence of the cover of the illusory energy, then everything becomes revealed. Just as light becomes revealed when the sun manifests itself. In the same way, when Krishna reveals himself, then we can begin to understand the nature of his transcendental abode, nature of his transcendental energies, and the nature of, and that is what Bhagavad Gita is. Bhagavad Gita is teaching us the most elementary basics of distinction between spirit and matter, and the controller of both. Prabhupada finds that as to be real knowledge. There is more that I could say, but the upshot of this is, I use that little analogy about the dog and the reflection. The upshot of it all is what Krishna is trying to help us to understand is instead of seeing things separate from me, try to see things connected to me. And as he's saying in that analogy that we gave, when we try to go for things and seeing how their importance is because it makes me happy, that is like the dog lunging for the reflection. There's no substance. There's no substance in the reflection. We keep on lunging for the reflection, trying to capture it, but it's not the substance. It's only reflection. The real happiness, the real substance, is that which is eternal. The reflection is that which is temporarily manifest, of which we are also eternal, but we have temporarily manifested in these particular bodies for some period of time. And Prabhupada explains that just like in the river, the river is flowing, and when the currents of the river is flowing, then the straws are flowing in the river, and sometimes they gather along the banks of the river in clumps of straw, and they're together for some time in a clump along the bank of the river. But because the river continues to flow, these clumps of straw break up and flow further downstream, and they come together with new clumps. In the same way, we are temporarily coming together in this life, with our members of our community, members of our society, members of this planet, members of the species, whatever it may be, coming together temporarily. But our real substance is understanding what is the eternal world and what is our connection with the eternal world. That is the essence. The more we simply go after the reflection, the more we become frustrated. But the more we begin to understand the nature of the substance, then we can see this world for what it is. Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. This means simply transforming, changing the consciousness of how to see everything. Ultimately, everything is connected to Krishna. And because it's connected to him, we should understand how to properly utilize it in his service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And now we have to end, and it's time for the evening aarti. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.